A Stanley Cup champion. He was the fifth overall pick by the New Jersey Devils back in 1989. He would go on to play 1,263 NHL regular season games, another 140 in the playoffs, and he moved into management, was assistant GM for many years, and he is currently now the general manager of the Minnesota Wild. Bill Guerin joins us. Bill, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I have to admit, I liked coming in from the break with a little Wild side from Motley Crue. That was my favorite metal band back in the 80s. I loved those guys, so that was a good one. I liked it.
Did you ever have, like, metal hair, Bill? Did you ever have, like, big, long, good, like,
no,
good metal
hair? No, I couldn't.
Hair?
My hair grows up and out. I was always jealous of the guys who had the great flow out the back of their helmet, and I just couldn't do it. I just didn't have it in my bag.
Hey, that's okay. Got to know with what you have. Well, Bill, in story time, we like to talk about your career, and of course, you had a storied career. But now you grew, you were born, it says here, in Wilbraham, Massachusetts. So, when did you start playing hockey, Bill? And were you in like a hockey hotbed as a young kid?
Actually, I was born in Worcester, as you say, in Massachusetts, Worcester. I lived there for a year. That's where my dad was born and raised. And then we moved out to Wilbraham when I was like a year. That Western Mass. So it's right next to Springfield. And that's, you know, obviously the American Hockey League offices have been there since day one. And we had the Springfield Indians and the Springfield Falcons, Springfield Thunderbirds. Edmonton had their team there for a couple of years. And that was, you know, Eddie Shore owned that team. Hockey hotbed, maybe not, but we did have a pretty, pretty rich hockey history there with having the American League and the Springfield Indians. And, you know, there was a lot of guys that ended up coming out of there.
You know, when you grew up to your buddies, was it like a natural choice to play hockey, or were you kind of unique to play hockey, when other guys are maybe doing some other sport in the winter?
You know what? I was kind of I guess it was pretty common. I think it was maybe a little different for me because I mean my mom's originally from Nicaragua, and she's the one that actually got me started. I mean, my dad was at work all day, and she had to find something for me to do, and she just had a friend that her son played hockey, and she's just like, yeah, put him in skating, and that was it. And then it just kind of took off. But yeah, there were a ton of guys that, you know, my age that played. We had a really good era of guys that kind of grew up and at least played college hockey, and quite a few played pro as well.
You played 2 years at Boston College after being drafted by the New Jersey Devils, fifth overall, and then you turned pro, Bill, and you know, you played, I think, a total over two seasons of 40 games in the American League, had 40 points, 23 goals, so obviously a lot of production. Tell me your first introduction to Lou Lamoriello with the New Jersey Devils.
Oh, man. Well, obviously draft day, but, you know, I've told this story now a couple times, and it's actually pretty amazing because, Jason, you know, back in those days, you get drafted, nobody talks to you. You don't have player development guys. You don't have, you know, people waiting for you after games. You just kind of do your thing. And, you know, if you're good, you're good. If you're not, you've got to figure out, you know, you have to figure out a way to make it. So, you know, 2 years goes by, and they just let me go to BC, and I didn't really hear from them at all. But in 1991, our team was really strong, but we got upset by Alaska Anchorage and the NCAAs. So, you know, what do you do when your season's over? You go out and you drown your sorrows. And, you know, I guess on Sunday morning, I was nursing a little bit of a hangover. But it was like 10 o'clock in the morning, my dorm room phone rang. And on the other line, it just said, Billy, it's Lou Lamoriello. I want you to come to New Jersey and talk about the rest of your the next step of your career. And I thought it was one of my buddies like pulling a prank on me. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. No way. He's like, Billy, it's Lou. I was like, oh, okay, this guy's for real. And it was just pretty funny. Like, I hadn't heard. How did he have my phone number? Like, it never rang before. He never called me. But that And then going into New Jersey, just meeting him and really starting to get to know him and understand that he's just a no-nonsense character. And just an amazing guy. He's a friend to this day and a mentor. And, you know, it's nice. It's always nice when the phone rings and it's him and we get to talk for a while. It's really cool.
So, Billy, what does he talk to you about in that conversation? Like, is it about just how to be a professional or areas of your game he wants you to tighten up or that are strong? Or like, what is he – like, he must have been following you from a distance, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. But you know what? You know, the great thing about working with a guy like him is how he kind of prepares for the phone call. Like, he's not just winging it. You can learn a lot just by seeing how prepared he is. He's an old school guy where there's no texting. It's you know what, we're going to talk like two human beings on the phone and we're going to work through this. And then there have been times where I've kind of been at maybe a little bit of a crossroads, a decision I have to make, and I'll just pick up the phone and call him and ask for his advice. And he's always he always makes time. And that's one of the other things is that, you know, if Lou Lemmer makes time for people, then that's what I need to do as well.
Bill Guerin joins us. And, you know, Bill, so you come in and you joined the Devils, I think it was in like February of the 91-92 season. You'd played some in Utica, then you played five or six games late in 91-92, and then you became a regular in 92-93. And for you, like, now that you're a GM, do you relate back, like some players, it's funny, some people think like the American League is like the worst place. It's like, oh my god, it's like you're getting sent to Siberia. But really, like, 90% of guys need to play at some point, whether it's 10 games or 100 games in the American League before they're ready for the NHL. Why do you think there's such a like it's looked upon as such a bad thing for some people to go to the American League?
Well, because players are never told that that's where they're going to be. They're always told that they're going to be in the NHL. And, you know, so anything that has to do with, you know, the minor leagues, you're just like, oh, whoa, no, this is not how it's supposed to work out. You know, guys are, they're shocked when you say that they're going to have to spend some time down there. Like, but what people forget is that the American Hockey League is the second best league in the world. It really is. And it's critical, for, like you said, for about 90% of the players, maybe even more, to spend time there. Whether it's just playing the games, or it's just getting acclimated to a pro lifestyle, a pro hockey style, how to manage, you know, coaches, learn teammates, and things like that. It's such a great stepping stone for a young player. I cherish my days in the American League. I'm still friends with a lot of the guys that I met down there and played with today. And you know what? That gave me the confidence for when I got called up to be ready and to, you know, to believe myself. Because if you go up too early to the NHL, I mean, hey, that's the real deal. And, you know, confidence is a very delicate thing, and it's easy to lose and hard to get back. So, when you know, we want a lot of our guys to spend time down there.
Billy Guerin joins us, a longtime NHL star. Bill, you know, you talk about the influence that Lou Lemire had on your group, and I've heard Scott Niemeyer talk about the impact Jacques Lemaire had on him as a D-man. I'm wondering, what kind of influence did Jacques have on you as a forward, and maybe was it more offensive mind or defensive mind? Like, how did he approach, you know, making Bill Guerin to what he would become his whole career?
You know what? I think it was just, it wasn't more offensive or defensive. It was common sense and responsibility. Like, just when you have the puck, he wanted you to create. He didn't want you to turn it over, but he also wanted you to, you know, when you come back in the defensive zone, you're on the D side of the puck. So come into your zone and stop. Be responsible. I struggled with that at first, and it was a longer learning curve maybe for me than Nieder. Jacques was just incredible. And you know what the biggest thing too was, is as great of a player as Jacques was, his main thing was it's all about the team. He didn't care who scored the goals, who did this, who did that. It was what type of guys are we going to have here that care about the team and are going to help us win. That's it.
Bill, you came out of Boston College, and, you know, they're wearing full shields. There's not a lot of fighting. You were a physical player. So when you get to the American League, I noticed you had 47 PIMs in 18 games in 92-93, and I was looking up your fight card. Like, had you had any experience at all in dropping the mitts before you turned pro?
No, not really. Very, very little. There might have been a fight here or there in like summer hockey or something like that, you know, when you're playing in men's leagues. But no, I never had to do the things that I did when I turned pro. But you know what? My idols were like Terry O'Reilly, loved
yeah.
Cam Neely. But on the other side of the coin, I loved Rick Middleton and guys like that. But I knew playing the style that I was going to play or have to play to be successful, that I was going to have to answer the bell. So I learned how to fight as a pro. And you talk about the American League and the value of it. One of the first things I did when I got there was I grabbed, you know, either Bill Heward or Jamie Huscroft or Brent
okay.
Severin. And I said, hey, this is my deal. I need to learn how to fight. And they taught me. And you know what? I started doing that in the American League. And then when I got called up and became a regular in New Jersey, I talked to Kenny Danico, Randy McKay, Scotty Stevens, guys like that. And they would teach me and we would practice. And then it was just a willingness to do it. And, you know, I took a lot of pride in being able to do that as well.
You know, you guys have build. The draft picks are there. Then you guys take the run at the Stanley Cup in 94, 95. And you look back at that team, so many great guys, like just good humans. And you talk about that's what they wanted. Did you guys know that year that this team was going to be a Stanley Cup winner?
Well, we knew we would have a chance. We fell short the year before against the Rangers. But we were an extremely tight team. But just kind of blue collar guys. You know what? When we'd go out to the bar, it was like a family affair. You know, you'd have wives, girlfriends, all the guys, and everybody knew everybody, and it was just fun. And we were just kind of low key, but we had kind of everything. I think our skill was kind of underestimated because of the system we played. But you got guys like Johnny Mack and Stefan Richie and Claude Lemieux, all 40 goal scorers and guys that could put the puck in the net. But we had toughness, you know, we had size. We had a lot of different things that helped us be successful. But I think the biggest thing was the commitment to the system and the team. And we sacrificed, you know, maybe some offensive opportunities because there was no cheat in our game. But I don't know. It's just the kind of guys we were, you know, and that, you know, Lou demanded that, and so did Jock.
Bill, you won a Stanley Cup in your third season with the New Jersey Devils, and then in your 16th season with the Pittsburgh Penguins. How different was Bill Guerin's post-Stanley Cup celebration from year 3 to year 16?
Quite a bit. Well, you know what? My wife and I were dating at the time of the 95 win. And, you know, I don't know how many years of marriage, by 09. I'm not, math isn't my strong suit. We had four kids also. So it was a very different event. Both great. Great experiences. You know what? And the one thing was like, you know, I got traded quite a bit and bounced around quite a bit at the end of my career. And, you know, we kept telling the kids, like, you know, we're trying to win again. And this is what it's all about. And this is kind of why we're doing some of these things. And then for it to really take place and for them to experience the win and what it meant, they got it. They understood. And they were always just kind of just jumping in and being real supportive. So I was really lucky, and that was a long time to wait for a second crack. It's you know, it's very special. It's something you can't take for granted.
Bill, your last three years in the league, you went 23 goals, 21 goals, 21 goals again. Like, it felt like you could keep playing. Why did you stop after 2010?
Well, the Penguins, you know, in all honesty, the Penguins weren't bringing me back. My heart was really there.
Okay.
I knew I had to just give it another try. I went to camp in Philly, and when they let me go, you know, that was kind of it. I knew it in my gut, you know. And Jason, you know this. I don't know how you felt at the end, but like, you get tired of the summer. You know what? Like, the workouts are a grind. You're getting older, so you don't recover as well. And you know what? I've got these four growing kids, and I didn't really want to move again and chase it. So I gave it one last shot in that training camp, and I was satisfied. You know what? I just had to look back and say, you know what? This is my time to walk away. And you know, maybe I could have squeezed out a couple more games or another year or whatever, but I just felt it was the right time.
Does it make it easier to make that choice when you have a couple of rings on your hand?
You know what? I don't think so.
Okay.
And I mean, I just feel like, yeah, you know what? Those are nice to have. They really are. But you know what? It's the game, and you love the game. You love just being a player in the NHL, and that's a really hard thing to give up. And you know, outside, just being in a locker room atmosphere, you never really have to grow up. I mean, it's pretty fun. But then the experience of game day, and that's what I miss the most is playing. Like, it's not even necessarily just being in the locker room with the guys or anything. It's being able to step out onto the ice in a National Hockey League game and play hockey. And you know what? You score a goal, you hear the roar of the crowd. You can get in a fight without going to jail. You know, you just playing hockey. Like, we all love it so much. So I just think no matter what, it's really hard to give up. But I think that's just because we love it so much, and that's a great thing.
Bill Guerin joins us on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Bill, it's been 10 years now since you played. You've been in management. You worked your way up. You put in your time. You're assistant GM for a long time, and then you got the Minnesota job, and you've really put your fingerprints on that. Were you always a player? Like, I don't know if it was late in your career. Did you start thinking, hey, management is what I want to be more than a coach? And why do you feel, you know, what's going to make you a successful GM?
Well, yeah, I mean, I did start thinking about it. When I got let go from Philly in that training camp, my first phone call was to my wife and just telling her what happened and that, you know, I'm going to retire. We had talked about it before, but my second phone call was to Ray Shiro. And I just said, Ray, I'm not going to play anymore. And I'd like to come in and meet with you and talk to you about, you know, the life after hockey and working. And so a couple of days later, I flew into Pittsburgh and I sat with Ray and, you know, he was good enough to let me start working part time. And, you know, I didn't even work for, you know, I just worked for expenses, no salary or anything like that. And I wanted to figure out what part of this I wanted to do. I tried TV, I liked it, but I was missing the team aspect of it. So I needed to find out what avenue I wanted to go in. I thought I'd be a good coach, but I wanted to see what this management thing was all about. And, you know, through my player development role, I got to really, you know, touch a lot of bases in how the team is put together. It's pro scouting, amateur scouting, player development, the minor leagues, the big team. Ray exposed me to all that, and I loved it. I loved the competitiveness of it. I loved the the all the work, just being in the rinks and things like that, and I chose the management side, and you know, I'm glad I did, because I have one of the best, I have the best job in the world, and well, second best job in the world. That the best job is being an NHL player. Second best job is being an NHL GM, and it's just great. And you know, he gave me great advice right away, or he just said, you know what, Billy, the thing that scares me the most is a former player that wants a title, a paycheck, and an office, and doesn't work for it. And that really hit me hard. And you know what, I worked my tail off, and you know what, I started traveling a lot again and missing things again at home. But those are the sacrifices you have to make.
One last one for you, Bill. I really appreciate your time. Here we are. We're hopefully maybe just, you know, 6 weeks away from the season start. And it's been a crazy time for everybody in the world due to the pandemic. Likely it's going to be a shortened season if they get it done. How does your approach as a GM change, having been a player, you know, during a shortened season early in your career and then a lockout? How do you think this season's going to play out? And does it change anything, your approach as a GM?
No. No, it really doesn't. I mean, I guess the biggest thing, and it's kind of funny, but I don't know anything different but this season. So I don't know a smooth season yet. But you know what? You get a lot of things thrown at you. You have to be ready to adjust on the fly. But the most important thing is taking all the distractions away from the players and just letting them come to the rink and preparing to play. And then, you know what, if we play 10 games or 70 games, I don't know, we're going to be ready, and the hockey players go out and they play hockey. And that's the most important thing, is that they're ready to do that. And we'll take all the other noise away from them. And then that's kind of it.
Bill, always great to catch up with you. I really appreciate your time, and hopefully we get to see all sorts of the games across the league in unique divisions. That itself could be a unique thing for the coming year.
Yeah, it sure could. And just to touch, like back when, you know, when you come into the NHL and you're learning how to fight, the one thing they don't teach you is decision-making. And when you decide to fight guys like Jason Strudwick on the odd night, that's something that I skipped the decision making class at Boston College. I remember lining up against you, and I'm like, oh, this guy's a monster. I said, this is a bad choice.
You know what's really funny, Billy? I fought a guy you know pretty well, George LaRocque, and that was even a worse choice. So I guess it rolls uphill. I'm still paying for that fight.
Oh, man. Good times. Oh, God. I wish we could do it again, Joe, just to be out there.
I hear you. I hear you, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.